Good morning, Nashville. Hour number two is on the way. Braden and Nick are out. They've been put in the penalty box for 24 hours, and then we're going to let them back in the building. Corey Curtis sitting in for those two guys. Derek Mason, still nice enough to tolerate my existence this morning. Mace, we're on to hour number two.
Yes, the big hour. Well, every hour is the big hour.
So if you're driving to work and you're saying, who the heck is that guy and why is he filling my car with this noise,
They recognize your voice, Corey.
Do they?
Yeah, I'm sure they recognize. Oh, that's Corey.
I mean, Corey, we have you on every Monday, man. It's not like.
That's true.
They're like, oh, that's Corey.
That's true.
I thought he was on television right now.
And I've been here for 16 years now.
Man.
Not as long as you.
Fast. I've been here off and on for 20-some years, half of my life.
Can I just say, watching you play in a Ravens uniform, one of the more difficult things that I've had to do.
Yeah, it was one of the more difficult things I had to do in leaving here and going there. But,
you know, Jackie Robinson, this is a great part. You know the whole Jackie Robinson, how his career ended?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
I don't.
Okay, so he's a Dodger for life.
Yeah.
He was traded to the Giants.
Oh, wow. You don't do that.
And you know what he did?
He retired.
Yeah. He said, I'm not doing it. And he retired. Yeah. He refused to play for the Giants, and so he retired.
Well, I couldn't retire. It was only after year eight.
Yeah, you had a lot of game left. I love Floyd, but you were. Do you give him a hard time about that, that you thought you were done?
I used to.
Look, you got to make those calls as a GM, and you're going to get some of them right and some of them wrong.
Well, he got that one wrong.
He did get that one
in every
wrong.
Way.
I wonder if you give him
that at the station. He's like, hey, what you going to trade me away from the station, too? What you going to do, Floyd?
Not mess with Floyd.
For the first year or two,
I messed with Floyd, and then after that, I forgave him.
And forgive me if I'm wrong. You're among the Hall of Fame nominees again this year, aren't you?
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Hopefully one day I get in, man.
I always say, you know, we talked about it before, you know, being in Nashville, you're not one of 32. You're kind of in the back five. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same for guys like you, Steve, and Eddie. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it may come down to that Veterans Committee.
Yeah.
Because you're not the sexy picks right up
at
the
front. Had I spent my 15 years in Baltimore, or had I spent my, you know, half of my years in New England.
Derek, if you're a Dallas Cowboy, you're in right now.
Oh, yeah, with those numbers I'm in.
Somebody would have handed you some popcorn and you ate it during a game, you would have been clutch.
If I'm in New England, I made it.
Yeah.
If I'm in New York with those numbers, I'm in.
Yeah, but you're not. And so it's going to come down to something like that. And I think, you know, the same way with Eddie and the same way with Steve. And I always say, you know, with Steve and Eddie especially, you know, people always say, can you tell the narrative of the NFL without this person in it? Well, look, when you say Nashville and Tennessee Titans, those are still the first two names you say. So you can't tell the story of this franchise without those two guys, and this franchise is part of the league.
But
regardless,
let me ask you this
real quick. Fact that you're still being nominated and you're part of the conversation is very, very flattering, and I think you should be.
But I will say this. If you do go to Canton, you got to walk down to Whitney, though.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Got to play it in the background.
I got you. I'm going to follow you with a boombox playing Whitney as you go across the stage.
People love our Whitney renditions.
Well, I am still rooting for you each step of the way. Now,
Thank you. In
California, they have recently passed the Fair Pay to Play Act, and there are other states talking about it. I know one of the legislators here in Tennessee brought it up as well. I think whether or not they pass it, I still don't know if the NCAA is going to kind of go for it because – it's the NCAA. The question on my phone here says, how could this hurt college football? I look at it completely different. How could it enhance college football? Everyone in college athletics is allowed to make money and an unlimited amount of money, except for the players.
Yeah.
College football is not amateur sports anymore.
No.
I'm not going to act like it's like, if you want to say Division II or Division III is amateur sports,
I can go with the spirit of the game. Yeah.
Every one of these kids in Division I football is there to become a player in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Every one of those teams is there to make money for their institution. You've got coaches making $5, $6, $7, $8 million. It's ridiculous. And we want to and look, they get a scholarship. I understand that. And here's the other aspect of this. We call it the Fair Pay to Play Act. This isn't about paying players to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving them the opportunity to make money on their likeness, which is basically to say, I can sign an autograph and get paid. What? I can sell a jersey and get paid. It's not saying the school has to write them a check for this. I mean, look, you know you played.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in season, you can't do anything
to
earn a dime.
No, you can't do anything.
And Michigan State is selling out of Derek Mason jerseys mm-hmm. in the bookstore, and you're not getting a dime. Julio Jones, or not Julio Jones, it was A.J. Green,
uh-huh.
got suspended 4 games because he sold his jersey, the jersey he physically owned.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it for $1,000 and got a 4-game suspension. It was his jersey, and he was not allowed to sell it. That's ridiculous. And I know everybody's going to get into all the semantics of, well, this booster could do this and this booster could do that. Guess what?
They're doing it anyway.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. People should be allowed to be people. Players should be allowed to be players. College athletics is not amateur athletics anymore. It's just not. Get it out of your head. And the equitable trade of scholarship
mm-hmm.
for playing isn't what it used to be.
No.
You didn't have the Big Ten Network. You didn't have the SEC Network. The finances are so much more. You see that in the coaches' contracts, that the trade is no longer equitable. And I'm saying on a football scale. I'm not saying on a softball scale or on an ice hockey scale. On a football scale, the trade is no longer as equitable as it used to be. It's totally tilted in the university and the NCAA's favor. So I am all for players having some opportunity to make money.
Well, I look at it from this standpoint. These are archaic rules that are put in place. And no one wants, or up until this point, no one wanted to change them. Because why? Because so many people were making money.
Free labor.
Exactly. It's, you know, we'll give you a little bit. We'll give you, which is great. I mean, an education is great. I've always said the one thing I can give my son and daughter that no one else can take away is a great education.
Yeah.
That's one thing I can give them, that no matter what you do, that's yours. No one can take it away from you. But in this day and age, it's more than just an education. You know, it's things that come from. You can't just give a kid. You can't just say, well, I'm going to give you an education and that's it. No, because you're not just getting, you're not just paying for an education. You're paying for an education, but then also what you're getting back is a bunch of money. These networks didn't give you television money because you were, you know, got it. You have a good softball team, or because you got a good swim team, or because, you know, you got a bunch of academic All-Americans on your team. They didn't give you that television contract because of that. They gave you that television contract because you're bringing in 5-star athletes, whether it be in basketball or base or football, or you have a great baseball player. They're giving you these outrageous contracts because of the commodity you put out on the field.
People are tuning in to
exactly.
see Tua, Trevor,
Absolutely.
Jerry, Judy. They're not tuning. I mean, as good of coaches as Dabo and Nick mm-hmm. are, people aren't tuning in to watch them.
No,
you're tuning in to watch the players.
If you don't have good players and you're not winning, people are not watching you.
Yeah.
That's just the basically the way it is. And for me, again, it goes back to, okay, what else? How fair can we make this? Because we are in a capitalistic society where we should be able to generate income off of our whatever. If we have something to sell legally, then we should be able to get money for it, whether I'm a college student or not.
I'm all for universities paying players,
yeah.
but I understand that there are a lot of Title IX issues.
Mm-hmm.
I always say there are smarter people than I who should be able to figure that out.
But they can figure it out, but they don't want to.
But this act
yeah.
doesn't have anything to do with that. This takes it to an individual basis
mm-hmm.
and says, if somebody wants to pay you for your autograph, they can pay you for their autograph, and you can take that money. So it's not saying someone on the men's mm-hmm. basketball team or baseball team or women's softball team or lacrosse team, they have the same opportunity to make money. It's just on them to see what their worth is. And so, like, not every player is going to get paid in this scenario.
And that's what I was going to say.
But not every player should be paid
You're
under this scenario.
Right.
Because it should be rewarding the one, like I say, how many Georgia jerseys with number one on them did A.J. Green sell?
Probably a bunch of them.
A bunch of them.
Yeah.
He sold one and got suspended for 4 games. So Georgia made millions on number one jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
A.J. Green made $1,000 and got suspended 4 games.
There should be a way that these athletes, and you know, you don't want this to end up being a wild, wild west. I get it. But if there's, and what you got to realize too is that from a national standpoint, there are maybe four or five guys that can get a national sponsorship. We're talking Tua, Trevor Lawrence, who else would you? Who else?
Jalen Hurts.
And they basically are all quarterbacks.
Yeah. Now, you're talking, a lot of these guys can get regional.
And that's what I'm saying.
Not national, but regional. Like in a college town, you know, like say Baton Rouge. Like right now, Burrow.
He's getting it.
He could make some money.
Exactly.
And you know what? Good for him.
He should be able to capitalize on his ability to play the game of football. And people believe, I think what people think is, this is going to get out of hand. You know, they're going to be underhanded deals.
That's just like the whole reefer madness thing. It's like the gateway drug. You give a little bit of money, it's going to go out of control.
No,
if these guys want money, right? I mean, or if people want to give these guys
they're
money.
They're going to find a way to give it to them.
They're going to find a way to give it to them. But this is a legal, this would be a legal way for these guys to be able to actually make some money when everybody else is making it. Look, Joe Burrow going to have an awesome year at LSU. He's thrust himself into the Heisman conversation. They're now a national championship contender because of him.
Yeah, guess, has nothing to do with Ed Orgeron.
Guess who's going to make more money?
The university.
And Ed Orgeron and all those coaches. They will be rewarded handsomely because this kid helped transform their program. And when the season's over, he gets nothing.
Yeah,
you can say, well, he gets to go to the NFL.
Not a lock.
But it isn't a lock. Yeah. It also, why we feel we have to limit what these kids can make, because it is not amateur athletics.
Here's the thing, and this is what I always kind of equate it to, is, you know, everybody on campus can work, even the kid that has a academic scholarship. He can work. He or she can work.
Absolutely. Anybody else on scholarship can work. The only ones who can't work are athletes.
Why can an athlete work? Well, they're getting their education paid for. The kid that has a scholarship is getting his education paid for. He's getting his room and board. He has to keep up a grade point average, just like the college athlete does as well. He or she has to keep a grade point average.
It's hypocritical beyond belief.
So anybody that says, you know, they are getting their scholarship for free, they're getting room and board, they're getting fed. Well, the kid that's in the math class, if he's a brilliant mathematician, he's on scholarship, he or she is on scholarship too, right?
Yeah.
They're getting all that paid for. But then after doing their homework, they can go and work. They can go do whatever they want to.
Yeah, there's other ways to solve this issue. All right, this weekend, Vols taking on Georgia, Vandy taking on Ole Miss. We saw what happened when Georgia played Vanderbilt. It didn't go real well.
Yeah, it didn't.
Can Tennessee put up any more of a fight than the Commodores did against Georgia?
No.
Well, we're going to delve a little bit more into it on the other side. You're listening to The Morning Drive on ESPN's 102.5 The Game, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Corey Curtis sitting in for Nick and Brayden this morning on The Morning Drive with Derek Mason. You just heard from Kyle Turris. One of the things I'm looking forward to most to seeing if he can kind of reclimate things and with this season with the Preds. And who does he skate with? Will they put him up there?
Yeah.
Will he be inserted onto the Jofa line over the – so it would be kind of the Joka line.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the Jofa line.
It'd be the Joka line.
Yeah.
Or the Joda. The Joda line.
Yoda.
The Joda line. But so, yeah, I mean, and I don't think I'm the only one. I think, you know, on top of Matt Duchene and everybody wanting to see that, everybody wants to see, you know, because, look, if he can't get it going, they got to look to move him.
Yeah. But, you know, I think Lavi does and we're going to talk more about it later on today when we have Adam Vingan on today, too. But I think Lavi does a great job at tinkering with the lineups. And he's one of those coaches that, you know, one, he has patience with players, I think. But if he has a good player, he tries to find a way to get him going.
Yeah.
And they're trying to do that with Turris this year.
I think also they're trying to develop more depth in their scoring.
They need it.
I mean, because if they can have two lines that are Jofa line level, then you become a very, very dangerous team.
Well,
And, you know, you're talking about pairing possibly Duchene Forsberg together, and then you've still got Johansson and Arvidsson together, and depending on who you want to put with them, whether it be Turris or Craig Smith or whoever, and, you know, if you can roll up both those lines and have them both be equally good, you know, the Nashville Predators would certainly be in business. They've got the Minnesota Wild tomorrow night in the season opener, the first of 82.
82 games. 82.
And that game will be right here.
A war of attrition.
102.5 The Game. Pete Weber and Chris Mason back for another year behind the mic. Now, back again to Knoxville this weekend. Oh, the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, you know, I looked up last night and I was shocked to see was how balanced this series is. Tennessee's got 23 wins. Mm-hmm. Georgia's got 23 wins. They've split the last four. Nobody, I could not believe
I
that.
I wouldn't have known that.
They've split the last four.
Considering how bad UT has been, I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought it either. Tennessee is a 25-point underdog at home to Georgia. Georgia's coming off of a very hard-fought victory over Notre Dame down there between the hedges. That was a good football game.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy Pruitt and company have had 2 weeks to prepare for this one.
If they had 3 weeks, Corey, they still wouldn't.
I'm not going to ask you if they can win because I think that's a ridiculous question. Can they take it to the fourth quarter and still be within two touchdowns?
The way they've played the last, you know, two games, I don't know if they can. A loss to Florida, where in the first half, I think if they don't, if Jennings doesn't drop the touchdown in the end zone, I think it's a different ball game. I think their you know, their attitudes are different. They believe now they can play with Florida, but he drops the touchdown, and then it just seems like everything just goes left for UT. They beat UTC 45-0, but come on, it's UTC. I don't think this Vol team, and we've seen it the whole season, I don't think this Vol team is equipped enough. I don't think they have the athletes. I don't think they have
well, they haven't developed the athletes.
Yeah, they haven't developed them.
And that was what we were told was going to happen with this staff. I mean, listen, they are working two quarterbacks in practice now, Brian Moore and Jarrett Garantano. And really, that's Garantano's fault because he hasn't been any good. But John Madden always said, and I'm a big believer in this, if you got two, you got none. And if Tennessee is splitting reps at quarterback, it's because they don't think they have one good option.
Yeah, well, like you said, Garantano has put himself in this situation. Now, you can say, well, you know, it changed offenses, and he's getting used to a new offensive coordinator and a new system, yada, yada, yada. I get it. I understand it. But it doesn't take away the fact how bad he's played at times during the season.
He's just missed people.
Yeah, some of the things he's decided to do with the football, throwing it into double coverage.
I mean, when I look at that BYU game, when I mean, Juwan Jennings just bailing him out.
Yes.
I mean, the terrible throws. Should be real. And I don't like to rip on college goods, but, I mean, they're not difficult throws.
No, but he's making them difficult.
Yeah.
And UT, it's going to take a while. And we talked about this yesterday. It's going to take a while for this program to even get, you know, to a level where, you know, they're respectable. You know, I'm not even talking.
They're
winning. Yeah, I'm not even talking about winning the East or winning SEC championships. It's going to take a while for this team to get back to a level of respectability.
So, because I think what you're saying is, like, right now,
yeah,
there's no hope for next year.
No, not the way, not based upon how they look now.
Yeah. Well, so why would they be dramatically better next year? I mean, that's what you're saying. There's no reason. You know, they could bring in an awesome recruiting class next year. That's not going to be enough to push them to be competitive with these teams. You know, people ask me what my goal was for Tennessee this year, and it was beat the teams you should beat.
Yeah.
They're not doing that. But, okay. They're not doing that.
No, you're right. Georgia State, that's the team you should beat.
BYU at home.
BYU should have beat BYU at home. If it's not for a miscue, then yeah, you beat them. But you had a miscue. It shouldn't even been that
close.
You
lost the game.
Exactly. You lost. Okay. You beat UTC. The way you played against Florida, I think, was disappointing. You know.
Which there's nothing new.
Exactly. And I know you were in the swamp, but still, this is a long-standing rivalry between these two teams. You know what you're going to get when you walk into that stadium. You were not up to the task. Some guys came in like Jennings and want to play even though he dropped one touchdown. He still played aggressive. He still was aggressive. The offensive line at times played well in the Florida game, but I think eventually, you know, Florida's defensive line warmed down and got to Garantano. But this program and these players right now, where they sit now, we say, well, they should win the games they're supposed to win. I don't think there's a game on their schedule moving forward they should win. And I know we look at Vandy and we say, well, they should, no, not anymore. Maybe five, ten years ago.
Vandy's dominated that series lately.
But not anymore.
So Vols plus 25. Are you taking the 25 or are you taking Georgia to cover?
I'm taking the 25. I'm taking the 25 because I think Georgia takes their foot off the pedal.
So you think like 38-14?
Yeah, I think Georgia, because Georgia has been known to have these lapses where for some reason they just don't play as well, and then they have to pick it back up. When a team scores a touchdown or two, they pick it back up, and then they become the Georgia team that we know they are. But I don't think they're going to beat UT by 20-something points. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'm taking Georgia, and I'm laying the points.
Ooh.
I'm taking Georgia. All right, when we come back, Vanderbilt's got Ole Miss. We've got the head coach of the Commodores, Derek Mason, on the way. Also want to say, Preds, Wild tomorrow night. I don't want to disrespect Hal Gill because he is way too large. Uh-huh. He's in the booth with Pete Weber. I said Chris Mason. I was in a time machine back to Mason's time in the radio. So I apologize to Hal Gill, who I really enjoy. He's one of the great personalities that we've had around here. So we've got that game tomorrow night right here on 102.5 The Game. This is Corey Curtis sitting in with Derek Mason on the Morning Drive. It's the morning dance party on the Morning Drive. Corey Curtis with Derek Mason this morning. Braden and Nick are out. They will be back, I believe, tomorrow. Right, Marquise?
Yeah, they'll be back tomorrow. And we will preview Preds and Wild tomorrow live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. So we'll be out there tomorrow. So, yeah, we'll preview that game and then also some more Titans and Bills as we anticipate that game on Sunday. So the boys will be back in town, as they say, as a good song says.
Boys
tomorrow.
Are back in town.
You know, Jared and the GM, they complain about how cold it is in the studio all the time. Mm-hmm. So I brought a pullover in here.
It's not cold in here.
I'm not wearing the pullover. So
something's just wrong with Jared.
He's soft.
Yeah.
He's soft.
S-O-F.
He wears that pullover everywhere, though. Yeah. Like, it don't matter the weather. It don't matter where he's at. It don't matter the occasion. He just wears it.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, guys like Derek and Eddie George, I always say if I looked like you guys, I would just wear, like, a Speedo everywhere I go. When you look like Jared, you wear a pullover everywhere you go. Okay?
You got to hide it, man. You got to hide it.
He's trying.
You got to commend him. He's always in the gym.
He's always trying.
He's always in the gym. You got to commend him. I like him.
All right. So, neither of us like Tennessee this weekend.
No.
Vanderbilt's got Ole Miss. The Doors are coming off their first win of the year where they took down Northern Illinois, who's not a bad football team.
No, they're not.
So I think that's a better win than people know. But, I mean, if you're Vanderbilt, it's a game that you should win. We're waiting for Derek Mason to call in here, so we'll talk a little bit to Commodores football with the head coach, but we'll talk about him as well before he calls in. It's their first win of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen struggles with this team early, but do you feel like this team's getting better?
I don't. You know what? And I will mention this to Coach Mason. I'm disappointed in this team because
now the schedule's been tough.
Schedule has.
I mean,
been
you've played.
Tough, yes.
I mean, they play Georgia and LSU.
Yes.
There's a lot of people who are going to lose to those two teams.
Has been tough. You're absolutely right. But playing Purdue, playing Northern
that was
Illinois,
disappointing.
Them giving up the points that they gave up, that's what I'm disappointed in.
Yeah.
That this team, at this point in time, playing those two, you know, those two, playing Georgia and LSU, playing them the way they did, and then coming back and giving up the points that they gave up against two teams that are not on that caliber of a Georgia and LSU, it's just disappointing to me from a defensive standpoint. And I know Coach Mason is equally or maybe even more disappointed.
Well, because he's a defensive guy. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's the disappointing part about it. I feel they could play a little bit better on offense, but I think it's their defense that has been sort of the Achilles heel this season. And hopefully it gets better as the season continues to move on for the Vols. It needs to get better. Me, for Vandy, it needs to get better.
All right. Well, the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores is on the line. So I've got two Derek Masons at the same time. This has honestly never happened before, and it's fantastic. Coach Mason, thanks for being here. Look, you've got Ole Miss, and we always say that this is a huge game for Vanderbilt every year. It's your crossover game, and it's one of those ones that really turns your season, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I mean, it's the game that we have this week, but, you know, I mean, Ole Miss is perennially a talented football team, and you know, when we've been able to come out on the other side of this game with victories, and it's propelled us, you know, forward and given us a chance to go to postseason. So it's probably no different this year. I mean, they're talented, and they got a, you know, young quarterback in Plumlee, who I think, you know, reminds you of Shea Patterson, and they've got skill all over the place, you know, on offense, defense, you know, under Coach McIntyre, you know, I mean, they're getting better, and you know, it's a formidable team. I mean, this team put up some points versus Alabama, and our football team's got to be prepared to go to Oxford and play, you know, its best ball game of the year.
I know you don't want to be in shootouts. You're a defensive guy, but I think there could be a lot of points on the board this Saturday.
Well, I know you say that. That's not the outcome I want, and that's not what I'm going to put out there. I'll let you throw that out there. For me, you know, I'm looking to try to, you know, slow that thing down, you know, as best we can. But you know, with that being said, man, you do have teams that can score. You know, the defenses are going to have to, you know, get some stops. Third downs, red zone football is going to be critical, and how special teams performs hopefully will carry the day, because we've got a pretty good idea what these offenses may be able to do.
Now, that's, you know, college football, it's tricky, it's funny, it's difficult from an offensive standpoint, because, you know, everything is geared for teams to score points, and we know that. You should get off the bus scoring 17 points. That's the way everything with the rules and everything else.
Right.
But, you know, for you being a defensive guy, mm-hmm. That has to be disappointing, what your defense hasn't been able to do. Is there one thing you can point to specifically that your team, your defense needs to get better at? Because you have the weapons on offense to score with a lot of teams in the country. Yeah. But, you know, if you can't stop anyone, then it makes it very difficult, because it puts pressure on offense each and every drive.
Right, right. Well, Derek, I was listening just before, you know, when I came on, and I think you were right. Yeah, you know, there is, you know, some type of angst about how we play defensively. I thought last week going into that game, I thought we did a better job, you know, going into it. I thought the game plan was good. You know, we held them for the first five drives. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what you want to see from a defense. I think what has to happen, though, for us is the consistency by which we play. Now, granted, man, we've had some injuries in the secondary, and we've tried to get a little better up front, a little more dynamic on third down with what we do, and in terms of substitution. But in some of these games, man, you can't substitute. So for us, we've got to be a little more steadfast in situational ball. Situational football defines defense, just like it does offense. What are you on third down? What are you in the red zone? Okay, I mean, and on first and second down, are you able to get teams off schedule and behind the chains? And when you do, can you capitalize? That's what this young group's got to continue every week to tighten down. Okay, so the focus and attention to detail in terms of what you're seeing and what we have to do to execute has to be better. And I think that's where the growth, you know, man, has to go over the next couple of weeks. And we get a chance to test it, you know, on the road at Oxford.
Also, if you can get a lead, I mean, that's, I don't want to say that's when you pile up defensive stats, but that gives you the chance to get after the quarterback a little bit, no matter how mobile he is.
Correct. I mean, you always want to play with the lead. I thought last week, that's what you saw again. You know, man, I can only reference that. We got off to a great start, you know, with the idea of scoring first. Then we were able to get, you know, man, off the field and found ourselves not giving away points when they got to the red zone. The score at halftime was 14-0. It should have been probably 28-0. Instead, it's 14. And, you know, I mean, if it's 28, you're applying more pressure. It's 14, and now, you know, we needed to start fast, and we didn't. So I look at those things. Those are the things that I talk about. Those are the things that we have to grind on. But the consistency by which we've been able to start offensively is what we have to continue to do. Now, man, we just got to keep adding, you know, man, to that sum total so that we can play with the lead, and that this defense, you know, like, continue continues to get confidence in what they do by attacking, you know, maybe the offense that we're playing against.
Now, your season thus far, when you're going against quarterbacks, it's been just about everywhere. You've played a pocket passer. You've played a guy that can run.
Right.
I mean, you've seen just about every quarterback that you can possibly see. What is it that makes Corral such a difficult person to play against? He has 4 touchdowns right now, only 1 interception. He's being efficient with the football, but he also can move around.
Yeah, I mean, Corral's a talented quarterback. I mean, he's much like the quarterbacks that they've had, you know, like before him. I mean, you look. I mean, that RPO offense, and granted, it's different than a Rich Rod. Rich Rod, you know, man, wants to run the football. I mean, he's much like, you know, man, Coach Malzahn in the idea that it's run oriented, and they're going to take shots just because, man, they're able to get into individual one-on-one matchups. So, you know, I mean, Corral's been efficient, but the one thing I saw with Plumlee last week as he got the start versus Alabama, mm-hmm. okay, no fear. I saw no fear. I saw him, you know, even late in that ball game, you know, drop some dimes versus Alabama. And so that's why I believe, you know, I mean, he's going to be the guy. Until I see different, that's what I believe, because I saw him change the dynamic, you know, like with what he can do with his legs. Now, granted, he probably doesn't throw the football as well as Corral, but he's got a good enough arm, and when you got a guy that can keep plays alive and keep defenses, you know, off balance by what he does, it changes the game.
Now, is it difficult for you as a team to have to prepare for 2 quarterbacks? I know you said, hey, listen, we have this one quarterback in mind, and we're going to prepare for him. But they also have another quarterback that can come in and get the job done, too. Is it tough trying to prepare for 2 quarterbacks in just a week span?
You know what? I think what you do, it's still the same offense. Uh-huh. It's not like they changed their plays. So yeah, like the preparation for the quarterback, you have to prepare for the quarterback that you feel, like, in your mind mm-hmm. can be the most dangerous. You know, man, in terms of corralling that quarterback or keeping that quarterback contained or whatever plan that you may have for him, you've got to set the plan up, based on, you know, man, which guy is going to give you the biggest amount of fits. Now, with that being the case, this offense hasn't changed. It's the same for both of these guys. I think one has more experience and can play from the pocket better. The other one has a chance to you know, extend plays, and that hasn't been good for our team. When you look at when we've been hurt, it's been really on extended plays where you know, man, quarterbacks have had a little more time. They've been able to move around the pocket, and balls have come out, you know, like as coverage is broken down. So, like, to me, that's what I work off of. That's what I've talked to Coach Tarver about. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, he's in there formulating the game plans. I just tell him what I see.
Well, Coach, on your offense, 2 heads of your 3-headed monster are having years with Keyshawn Vaughn and Kalijah Lipscomb. What do you need to do to incorporate the big tight end Jarrad Pinkney more in your offense? Because, I mean, this is a guy who's got playmaking ability at that position.
He's a matchup problem, man. But that's on us. You know, he's not a speed and space guy. I mean, you leave that to the small skill guys, man. You let those guys do what they do. Our plan will be, you know, man, fully invested in, you know, man, getting Jarrad Pinkney, you know, man, involved in what we do. And believe me, it's not hard. I mean, it's not like I'm telling you something where, you know, Ole Miss is going to hear it. I mean, they hear it. I mean, we came into the season with the big 3, so that's really not changing. We need to get him involved because that's what sets up. When you can work the middle of the field, that's what sets up, you know, man, the ability for you to be balanced on offense and to get everybody else involved. They can't take away everybody. You know, we've sort of shut ourselves down, you know, like with not being able to get him, you know, his touches in the right spots. And it's about where he's touching the ball, not if he's touching the ball, where he's touching the ball. He's got to touch it between the hashes, and that's just part of the game plan. That's part of what we'll do, and, you know, it'll be fun to watch. We got a game to play on Saturday, so let's ride.
All right. Well, Coach, I want to ask you about one more young man, and that's because he's one I know pretty well, and I'm excited to see him playing this year. How is Grant Miller doing at center? I know Derek Mason, you probably knew him from when he was a little guy running around the locker room. He's a big guy now, and he's been starting at center. How's he faring for you?
You know, I mean, he's faring well. You know, he's learning. I mean, this is the SEC. And he's had to, you know, Gretz had to, you know, misstep into the shoes of a pretty good player that we had a year ago. And now what he's doing is starting to, you know, create his own legacy. I think, you know, for him, you know, it's been a little while, or for him, what he would say is a long time coming, man. But Grant's big. He's physical. He came to college at, you know, 255 pounds, and now, you know, man, he's 305. So when you look at him, the athleticism, he's got his dad's traits now when you talk about, you know, athleticism, mean streak, you know, man, ability to play the game. He continues to get better every week, man, because as a center, man, you got to identify a lot of things, run and pass. And so, you know, as this season goes along, Grant's going to be one of those guys that people are going to be talking about late in the season. And, you know, his career is going to be a great one here at Vanderbilt.
Well, we really appreciate your time. We know this is a big game, like you talked about. This is one of those key games to the postseason. So we all want to see the Vanderbilt Commodores do well this Saturday. Thanks for your time, Coach.
Hey, thank you all. Take care. Anchor down.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I didn't say this to Coach, but when Grant came here his summer of his freshman year, he was 6'4", 255 pounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the summer, you kind of work out in the week, and then the weekends are yours. He would kind of come stay down at my house on the weekends. And they were like, yeah, they want me to be 300 pounds. I was shoving food down his throat. My wife would wake him up.
Uh-huh.
She's like, you're sleeping too long.
Uh-huh.
You've got to wake up. You're burning too many calories.
Oh, my goodness.
And he is huge now. He's huge. I mean, like I said, Grant Miller is the son of former Titans tackle Fred Miller.
Uh-huh.
He's the oldest of two boys. And, you know, Fred is one of the largest men I've ever laid eyes in my entire life.
I just saw Fred 2 weeks ago when they did the Steve and Eddie.
No, he came in town for that?
Yeah, he was in town. I saw him briefly. And got a chance to talk with them. Yeah, Fred's huge. He's a massive guy.
And so Grant, and here's the other thing. Grant is 6'4", and 305, and lean. There's not a lot of fat on his body. He's very conscious of that, and he's just huge. And it's going to be very interesting to see. Coach Mason touched down at how he feels like it's been a long time coming. He's a redshirt sophomore.
Wow.
And he's starting the SEC. These kids don't realize that that's doing really, really well. But they've got Ole Miss this weekend, so we look forward to that coming up. I'm going too long, so I apologize, Marquise. This is Corey Curtis.
No, that's all good, man. That's what we do here, man. We manage, man. It's all good, Corey.
Sitting in with our Derek Mason on ESPN's 102.5 The Game. This is the Morning Drive. Roman Josi, the captain of the Nashville Predators, they take on the Minnesota Wild tomorrow night in the season opener. That could be the first place team in the Central Division and the last place team in the Central Division. Really shocking to see them blow out the GM in such short order. I mean, bam, like 1 year and out.
Yeah, I mean, some teams don't wait around.
Yeah.
Some teams just like to, you know,
it was
if
really,
it's not working, then we want to move on.
I think Craig Leopold talked about a lack of communication, and I was just like, he was your guy. I don't know.
Well, would you, okay.
He was your guy.
I sound like a,
would you rather?
Would you rather? No. Josh, I'm sorry. No, but, yeah, seriously, would you rather, you know, if it's not working, get him out of there quickly than to hold on
right.
a little bit too long.
And see if he can change
or
whatever. No, you're exactly right. So it looks like a long year in Minnesota, which I know is not what Ryan Suter and Zach Parise had in mind when they teamed up to go up there. It hasn't quite worked out like they hoped it would. And in Nashville, I know hopes are high, but they've got to regain that edge. They've got to be that team. I don't want to say the overachieving team anymore because they've got talent, but they've got to play with that urgency and edge that was just frankly missing last season.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the playoffs. That was terrible.
I listened to Jared and Jim yesterday, and then I saw Jared's tweet. And, you know, people, y'all got to understand, it's his opinion, okay? And it's his opinion. It's not like it's fact or it's going to happen.
And it was kind of along the lines of your Titans opinion where they could go 6-10 or 10-6.
Absolutely.
He's basically saying the Preds could go big and maybe it could all fall apart. And I understand what he's saying because there's only a couple of new players with the Preds, but there are a lot of new hands in the kitchen.
Exactly.
And that can go poorly sometimes.
Yeah, and it's just trying to figure out what works best for this Pred team. And if I'm looking at the trend, and you can say whatever you want to say, but if I'm looking at the trend of this team, I know it's a little bit different. This team is different from what they were last year and the year before that. But 2 years, 2-3 years ago, They went to the Stanley Cup final. The year after that, they won the Presidents and got eliminated in the second round. Last year, they get put out in the first round. Trends tell me that if they don't play well, if they don't do the thing, if the power play doesn't get better, if they don't do the things they are supposed to do that we believe they can do, Jared is absolutely right.
Yeah.
They can miss the playoffs, okay? It's not this foregone conclusion that just because they're the Predators, they're going to make the playoffs. The trend has been set.
Yeah.
And if they don't get things corrected, which I think they will, but if they don't, it's not an asinine comment for a guy to say, it's his opinion now, for a guy to say, hey, listen, this team, they can either win the whole thing or they cannot make the playoffs. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. And anybody that says that's idiotic, then there's something wrong with you because it can happen both ways.
Because they didn't look like a playoff team against Dallas.
Absolutely, and we're not saying they are not a good team.
No, they've got a lot of great pieces.
But
you know, it's how you play.
Exactly.
And they've got to.
When did you get injured?
Yeah.
You know, they got injured early on in the season. They were able to pick it up. It's a war of attrition. And if you stay healthy longer, then your shot at making the playoffs increase, especially with the team that the Preds have. But if you don't stay healthy, if you don't correct the things that we thought that were bad last year, i.e. the power play, if Duchesne doesn't get, you know, going the way you thought. Listen, Turris had problems, you know.
Yeah.
Getting himself acclimated last year. It's not out of the realm to think, you know, Matt Duchesne might, you know, it might take him a while to get going with this group. And if it does, then okay. It's sports. It takes a guy a while to get acclimated to new surroundings. Mm-hmm. And they only had, what, 5 or 6 preseason games? And I know that practice.
I mean, the season's like 9 months long.
Exactly.
So he does have some time.
Absolutely. He's going to have some time. So, but it's not out of the realm to say, hey, listen, man, this team's good enough. They can win a President's Trophy again, and they can find themselves in the Stanley Cup Finals, and they can win.
Yeah.
Or, if we're looking at the trend, they can find themselves not in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's sport.
If they don't fix the power play, because it was amongst the worst in the league last year, and you've got to be able to score there. But, you know, and you've got reason to think that they're going to be better. But, again, there was look, before last season started, if I was going to tell you Dallas was going to beat the Preds in round one and do it convincingly, you would have said, what happened?
Yeah.
What the heck happened? And so, you know, there is a trend there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of belief that trend can be reversed.
Exactly.
But they've got to prove it. I mean, it's like the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved the Browns coming into the season. And guess what? They came out in the opening game and they looked like
trash.
The Cleveland Browns.
They were who we thought they were, as Delanie Walker said.
Yeah. And so you know, and that's the great thing about when the season starts. Because, like, you know, I'm a worrier.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look, like, at the Titans' schedule to start the season, I'm like, they can lose all 16 of those games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying they're going 0-16, but I'm like, they could play well and lose every single one of these games. They're not the Patriots playing the Jets and the Dolphins four times.
No, you're right.
I mean, I'm like going, oh, my gosh. And then you find out, you know, okay, they play. And that's why I always say, I can't make a prediction really on the season because I don't know who people are going to be when you play them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Titans got the Falcons at the right time.
Exactly.
The Falcons could be a play. Look, when December gets here, the Falcons could still be a team that nobody wants to play because they've got that kind of talent on that roster.
Exactly.
Now, can they get it fixed? And that's the same type of question we're talking about the Nashville Predators after last season. And we've seen some good signs in the preseason so far. I got us off on a tangent there because of the captain.
It is what it is. And you know, obviously they have a game tomorrow, season opener.
Yep.
And, you know,
I'm here on 102.5 The Game.
Yes, you're here. And we're going to talk about the Preds. But we're also going to be honest in what we see. And I don't need to be an expert to look at a team and say, this is what I see. Now, I could be right. I could be wrong. But this is what I see. Well, what I saw last year is that this team only converted on 12-point-something% of their power play, the worst since 2005, 2006. I mean, that needs to get better. Will it get better? I think it will.
Yeah, I think
it needs to.
I think Matt Duchesne's speed is going to be enormous for this team, and I think they're going to be pretty darn good this year.
Yeah.
I will go ahead and say, if I had to push my chips on the table,
I would push it that way too.
I would say they're going to be pretty darn good. Where would you push your chips on Vanderbilt? Because because we just got done talking with Derek Mason. I think it's going to be a high scoring game. And again, the question is, you were talking about that Vanderbilt defense. Can they slow down Ole Miss enough for Keyshawn Vaughn to go for 230 yards and four touchdowns and win the game?
Well, he looked good last week. And, I mean, frankly, he's looked good all season.
Frankly, he should be playing on Sundays,
yeah.
Derek. He shouldn't
be
at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
He should be playing on Sundays.
Well, he decided he wanted to come back, and it was good for the program. That
it was
he came
awesome
back.
For the
yeah.
program.
I think Vandy wins the game.
But
here's
Boom.
The big but. But that
Derek
defense.
He's got a big butt for us.
That defense has to play better.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't. Because, you know, Corey. I mean, you've seen enough sports and enough college football and pro football that eventually you put too much stress on the offense to score points. Every series is like, you know, everyone's tight. It's like, we got to score. We got to score because our defense is not stopping anyone. And an offense don't want to walk on the field feeling we got to score in order to win this game. Now, every offense want to score, but you got to believe in your defense that is going to go out there and at least get one or two stops where you can at least build a lead and then go from there. And frankly, right now, Vandy's defense has been sort of that Achilles heel for them. They haven't been, other than last week, and Coach Mason was right, through two or three quarters, they were able to shut down NIU. But yet and still, you know, if you can't go into this Ole Miss game and you can't stop that offense, and they're not. Ole Miss, I think, is averaging below 30 points a game offensively. So if that is indeed the case, then you should be able to go in as a defensive team and slow that offense down enough that your offense is able to generate a lead.
All right. Well, Derek Mason likes Vanderbilt straight up. I like Vanderbilt with the points. I think it's going to be a close football game. When we return on the Morning Drive, Eric Bacharach from the Tennessean will be here to talk Tennessee Titans football. They've got the Buffalo Bills. The Titans are a 3-point favorite to get to 3-2. They are 0-2 as a favorite this season. We'll talk about that on the other side of 8 o'clock. This is Corey Curtis sitting in with Derek Mason on ESPN's 102.5 The Game. This is the Morning Drive.